America!
This is the Desert Update for July 5th, 2015. I am Filippo D'Alfa.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Teresa Sammons.
Holiday weekend is wrapping up. Everybody is probably stuffed on hamburgers and hot dogs and maybe a little bit hungover, but we're here holding down the fort. How you guys been?
It's been a little bit crazy. We didn't actually get a Let's Weekend done because I think everyone was a bit busy and wasn't really a whole lot to talk about, but...
Yeah,
I still have the too much barbecue sweats.
That just means you did it right, though.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, we had Canada Day on the 1st over here, so kind of got that out of our system, and I've mostly recovered from that now. So.
Mostly.
Yeah. Anyway, so what you guys been playing, Pat?
Still on Project Cars for the review. Haven't really been able to spend as much time with it as I would have liked. But, you know, it'll come with time. And this is probably the busiest I've been on the editorial side since we started podcasting, so it'll come along. I got back into Final Fantasy XIV. Heaven's Ward came out this week. And I got in on that. I haven't really had a chance to play a lot of the Heaven's Ward content yet. But it just feels good to be back on the game and playing it again, and just really look forward to having a full relapse of that addiction. Record Keeper, also kind of funny thing. They reissued Sephiroth, and let me tell you guys, if there is only one reason for any of you to download Record Keeper and play it. 16-bit Sephiroth doing the 16-bit victory cheer at the end of every battle. Pretty good reason.
Wow. Yeah, it's pretty awesome, isn't it?
Yeah.
The first time I saw that,
so
I looked
out of place.
I know. I looked at it. It's like, this is wrong. This is just so wrong. It's like in Chicago eating a hot dog with ketchup on it. It's that level of
wrong.
Isn't that illegal?
Yeah, that's... It's an abomination, is what it is.
You get like a crew to show up.
Hot dog police.
Throw you in the paddy wagon.
Yeah.
So, not only did I unlock Sephiroth, I got him to level 50. And I did an 11-time relic drop. And I'm glad I did because it dropped One Winged Angel, which is his ultimate weapon.
Mm-hmm. You still suck, by the way.
Hey, at least I only got one this time.
I've done 2 11 drops since it was released, and I have not gotten anything. The last two have been crap. Absolute crap.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it comes with a new limit break called Oblivion, I believe. Or no, that might be his basic one. Whatever it is, it just does massive amounts of damage to every enemy on screen. So I geared him up and made him my what they call roaming warrior, which means that other players can summon him, and I will get 200 gil every time that happens. So I set this up while I was on my lunch break at work this morning. And I got off work at 7 o'clock, opened up Record Keeper, and I had 38 new followers.
Yep.
That would probably do it.
That was more than double the number of followers I'd already had with just the Dark Knight Cecil sort of drain sword that I was using for my roaming warrior beforehand. Now it's just 9999 for everybody.
Yeah,
I thought that was pretty awesome. And something I can talk about, not at the length that I would like, so I'm not going to say a whole ton. But the game I've been playing for a review, in addition to Project Cars, is Lost Dimension. And this is an RPG by Atlus for the PS3 and PlayStation Vita. Comes out on, is it the 27th or the 28th? It's the 28th. I'm still under embargo for a lot of information about this game, but I can acknowledge that I'm playing it. It definitely has my attention. It's a premise that hasn't, as far as I'm aware, been played with very much in this genre. I've still got to play it a lot more to give a more educated perspective on how well they make it work. But
yeah, I think you can talk about the basic premise and synopsis because that's on their website already. So
okay, well, so there's this terrorist who just calls himself The End, and that's a pretty appropriate name. He wipes out about like a third of the human population all at once, and then sets up this compound right in the middle of a city, and sort of a superhero team, 11 people just get sent in there to go after him, but something happens the moment they set foot in there. It kind of scrambles their memories, so they don't have full recollection of each other or anything. And upon touching base with The End, once they get into that tower, he informs them that, they have 13 days, I think, to climb the tower, or he will finish the job. And every time they're getting ready to go up another floor, they have to vote to kill one of them off before they can advance. And there are traitors in their midst. So
this,
you're
this
doing.
This kind of sounds like a post-apocalyptic version of Survivor.
Kind of. It's a really interesting premise because, you know, you're going through all these battles, and the combat system I absolutely love. It kind of reminds me of Valkyria Chronicles. It has a pretty liberal assist system to go with it. Like, if you attack an enemy, any other teammates within range of that enemy will open up on them too. So that's a lot of fun. So you're going through all these battles, and the main character, Sho, is a psychic, so he can kind of figure out for himself how the voting is going to go once they have to go up the floor, who trusts who, and so on and so forth. He has to spend the entire time between floors trying to rat out the traitor. Talking to other party members, seeing what they think, things like that. And it gives you the tools that you need to figure it out. But, like I said, it's a really interesting premise. I just need to play it a little more and get into some of the new Game Plus stuff and really dig in, because there's quite a bit going on here.
Yeah, so, sounds like it.
So,
and you got a couple of weeks to, you know, get your review in. So.
Yeah, I'm glad I do too, because it's definitely one of the most interesting ones I've played in quite some time. Anyway, how about you?
Well, I've been playing more Mortal Kombat 10 because I still love that game. You know, the online play is getting better. That 4th of July tower was awesome with all the random rockets and saw blades and just junk being thrown at you. So that was fun. And it's especially kind of fun where all the rockets explode as fireworks instead of just random and regular explosions. So It was pretty interesting. I'm hoping that they do more of that for holidays like Halloween and Christmas. You know,
I was gonna say, what the hell do they have in mind for Halloween?
With Mortal Kombat, you can never tell. So
that's true.
That's gonna be fun. And I've been playing more Forza 5. You know, getting my level up there because apparently saves and stuff will transfer over to Forza 6, and so. Being looking forward to that. I'm already racking up Forza rewards for Forza 6, so just get more of that going.
I really need to get on that myself.
Yeah. I'm sitting at around with all the rewards that I've racked up for Forza 6, I'm going to be starting the game with about 1.5 million credits.
Nice. So,
yeah. Very pleased with that.
Yeah, I'm going to be so poor that day.
Yeah, you got NHL 16 coming out that day, too. Huh?
Yeah, Mighty No. 9 comes out that day, too.
Oh, God damn it.
Yeah, that was more or less my reaction.
September 15th, the day our Pavagri starts. At least ramen is very cheap.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And you know what? You can do a lot of cool stuff with that, too.
Yeah. So... How about you, Brandon?
You know what else is really cheap?
What?
Pork rind.
Nice.
Dude, you are speaking my language.
Oh, yeah.
But I am still playing Gwent, the game formerly known as Witcher 3. But I have been trying to keep the Gwent line to a minimum so I can get further on in the game, and I think I'm about a little over halfway through now.
So does that mean you're focusing exclusively on Gwent side quests now?
No, I'm trying to spread it out. Because, as I've said many, many times before, there is just an ungodly amount of content in the game.
Yeah. Well, no, that's what I meant, because... if you're not playing Gwent, then you're doing side quests.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
anything that is not Gwent is a side quest.
But the funny thing is, in the Witcher universe, Geralt basically has two main love interests. There is his longtime girlfriend Yennefer, who is his main love interest in the books, and Yennefer is basically, you know, both of these girls are sorceresses. His other main girlfriend is Triss, Triss Marigold, who is the fiery redhead. And the thing is, during the first couple of Witcher games, Geralt had actually lost his memory because he had just, spoiler alert, in the last of the original books, he actually died. And they brought him. He managed to resurrect him in the first game. But the thing is, when they resurrected him in the first game, the only thing he remembers is that his name, that he's a Witcher, and his training, and that's about it. And
so the games take place after the novels.
Yes. And the thing is,
I've been under the impression this whole time that they were running side by side.
No,
doing a kind of a game
they
of
are sequels
thing.
To the novels. And the thing is, Sapkowski, the original author, doesn't necessarily consider them canon. But that's neither here nor there. But see, here's the thing. Because he had lost his memory for the first year or so, he was having this relationship with Triss, you know, because he had no idea that he'd had a previous relationship. Here's the problem, though. Triss did know.
Oh dear.
So, in some ways, you could say she was sort of taking advantage of him. Yeah. But here's the thing. At the point where I am at, he has finally met up back with Yennefer, and he is trying to get all of that, you know, back on track. Only thing is, Yennefer isn't quite still very happy with what went down with him and Triss. And Yennefer also has a bit of a temper. And there's a point where Okay, and the point where I'm at, she has gone back to Kaer Morhen, which is the sort of the main complex where all the Witchers live. And one of the first things she does there is she throws the she actually throws Geralt's bed over the balcony, because that was the bed that him and Triss shared.
Wow.
And, oh, it gets better. When he gets up to the tower where she's sort of made her, you know, her sort of home base where she set up her all of her equipment and stuff, she's basically not in a very good mood, and Geralt basically is like, "What's wrong?" And she's like, "Well, the thing is, you were fucking my friend for about a year, you know, behind my back without me knowing." And he goes, "Jennifer, I told you I'd lost my memory." She goes, "And I've lost my patience." And then she teleports you and drops you into the nearby lake.
Okay, then.
She's like, "Wow, she is not in a good mood."
Yeah, I don't think anybody should be messing with her.
Nope.
And he's probably just sitting there thinking, okay, I can think of a few ways this could have gone worse, actually.
Yeah. Keep in mind, though, this is well after me and her had did it on the unicorn, so. Lesson here is Witcher 3 is an interesting game. You all need to play it.
I think so. Wow.
And the best part is they're still giving out free DLC. So,
yeah. They seem completely awesome about that.
Yeah. That's cool. But other than Witcher 3, I fired up my old Sega emulator, and I've been playing Rocket Knight Adventures, which is an old Sega. I'm not sure. I remember
it was
it's
Konami, wasn't it?
Yep, it's a Konami game. Just as a FYI, the character that you play in Rocket Knight Adventures is one of the guys that makes a cameo in the nightclub in Snatcher, along with, you know, the guys from Contra and Simon Belmont and Snake and Dracula. But it's a fun game. I haven't gotten that far into it yet, but, you know, it's old school fun platforming adventure.
Yeah, I know all that one. I've got the cartridge.
Mm-hmm.
It's the kind that they're just starting to remember how to make again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course, Konami won't be a part of that, but.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unless they change their mind again, because you never know.
Well, even if they change their mind again, who's left?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Somehow doubt that they're going to be able to hire anyone back.
Yeah.
I think that ship has sailed. Yeah.
Mm.
But yeah, Rocket Knight Adventure, really, really good game to be playing, especially now.
Yeah, it is.
Have you tried I don't think there was a Super Nintendo version. There was a Super NES version of Sparkster, which wasn't as good.
Yeah, there is no SNES version of this, I made sure.
Yeah. Oh, well. Yeah. And Theresa.
Well. Yes, I am playing much of the same, but I have added something to my little repertoire, and it should not surprise you at all.
It involves cats, doesn't it?
It totally involves cats. Neko Atsumi, which is just, oh my gosh. Well,
is this on Steam? Is it what is it?
No, it's iOS and Android. So it's a mobile. It's a mobile. Well, I didn't even see if it was on Steam. But you know what? I'm so far in. I'm not stopping what I'm doing. So you have this little garden outside, and you can buy special cat food. You can buy cheap cat food. You put bags out there for them to play in and balls of yarn. There's special rare cats. If you put a baseball out there, you could get I don't even know what his name is. Probably named after some famous Japanese baseball player. Mm. It's just insane. They bring you treats sometimes, but usually they just leave you fish so you can buy them more crap. And you know what? You don't have to clean their litter pans. So this one's all right, you know? Mm.
This kind of sounds like a cat version of Viva Piñata.
Kinda, yeah. Yeah. Mm. And it's, you know, it's got the whole cute thing. Japan is just, they're awesome. They play these things that you think you'd never be interested in. And, you know, and then there you go.
7 hours later. It's like,
yeah. Well, it's that one's kind of a, you know, you play it while you're waiting for your stamina to build back up in Final Fantasy Record Keeper.
Yeah. My only question is this. What is this outside you speak of, Kemosabe?
It is only in video games. I don't know what it is. You know what? Sometimes outside is overrated. We went out on our balcony to watch the fireworks, and a freaking mosquito bit me in the knuckle on my thumb. Are they even going to get blood out of there?
Oh, that's like the worst.
But outside is beautiful when you see it on video games. Then you do the real thing, and it's hot, and it's sweaty, and there's bugs, and there's ants that crawl up your legs and bite you, and
Yeah. See, this is why I'm really stoked for virtual reality, because we can have all the advantages of outside without any of the drawbacks.
Yeah.
Exactly. There's no ozone action days.
And out here in Logan, Utah, I walked out of work this morning to be greeted with warm rain.
Nice.
That's like a special kind of miserable. Like, you don't even get the refreshing quality of cold rain. It's just, you know.
I can't think of many things worse than that.
Yeah.
Well, keep in mind, this is, you know, I'm here in Georgia in July, so
yeah,
we know what it's like there.
Yeah,
it's a special kind of hell.
Yeah. You can cut the air with a knife, right?
Oh, you could probably light it on fire too.
Woo! <That's... laughs>
It may do that on its own.
Yeah.
That sounds quite
and keep
unpleasant.
In mind, it's not just that. Keep in mind, I live out in the boonies, too. So, I mean, and here's a special kind of, here's something particularly bad. I don't know if you know, I don't know if I've told you guys this before, but the garbage truck doesn't come by our neighborhood. So, I actually have to load up all the trash cans at my house into my dad's truck, drive about 3 or 4 miles down to the dump while it's hot and stinking and rotting, and then put on some gloves and empty it out by hand.
Wow. See, you guys are a little more advanced than in Kentucky. They would just take it to the pond in the back, you know, 3 or 4 acres. And dump it in the pond. I am not kidding.
No, I know you're not. I've been to Kentucky, so.
Yeah. And, you know, they would drink the water that comes out of the well, like, you know, 400 feet away from the outdoor pond-filled garbage dump.
Yeah, it's filtered through the
sand. You know, they say out of sight, out of mind, but.
Yeah.
Nasty.
Yeah. Oh, okay. My gosh. Yeah, virtual reality. We can have swimming without the chlorine eyes. Oh, it's going to be great.
Yeah. So on that pleasant note.
Where do we go from here?
Well, we could go to some more nastiness here with Warner. Following up on last week's discussion of Arkham Knight's PC problems, apparently Warner knew about them months in advance. The QA team had been telling them, and they did nothing about it.
Shock. Amazement. Shock.
It's just, wow, Warner not spending money on PC on their PC port. Imagine that. Yeah. And, you know, NVIDIA is a kind of skeezy on this, too, because their GameWorks video that they showed off all the tech that the PC version was using was sped up.
What?
The game's locked at 30 frames a second, and they showed 60 FPS gameplay. What they actually did was took the 30 FPS and sped it up. And, like, if you're paying attention to the sound effects, you'll hear that they're, like, chipmunky.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't even do a good job of faking
this. This just keeps getting better.
Warner, you just give us so much great material. It's amazing.
This is impressive in its shit showness.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh my. Wow.
And the thing is, you know, Warner hasn't been in the game field as long as, you know, Activision or EA, and already they're sort of climbing up to the level of shittiness that the other two are.
Does Mortal Kombat 10 even work on PC yet?
Yeah, it's sort of not broken now, so.
Oh, thank goodness sort for
of.
That.
Sort of, yeah. The online play is still a bit hit and miss, but, like.
It'll run now?
It runs now, yeah. Unlike, where when it started out, you had to manually download all the content packs because the installer wouldn't do it for you.
Oh yeah,
yeah. And then
oh god, have you guys seen the video that Angry Joe did when he was streaming his playing Arkham Knight on his PC?
No. I tend to avoid god. Angry Joe.
Okay,
he's not for me.
Okay. Okay, here's the thing about Angry Joe. Despite what his name means, there's very rare when he actually gets really angry on video. And I mean like genuinely angry.
Yeah.
Most of it's just a character. But
not this time.
Not this time. The thing crashed and he set up his camera and just the look on his face. Just it looks like I mean he started screaming. I mean he was like, I paid $120 for this crap, you know. And he
so
also,
he went straight
you know,
to
he,
blinding homicidal rage.
Yeah, well wouldn't you?
Well yeah,
I'm not judging.
Yeah. Well, when you spend $120 on a PC game, you kind of expect it to work.
Mm-hmm. He even got his receipt out, showed all the money he spent. And the thing is, he also bought the PlayStation port, too. But the thing is, he bought all of his, you know, the season pass and stuff for the PC port.
Yeah. That was a mistake.
Tactical error.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh yeah, Warner, you guys, yeah, you need to clean up your act here because I don't think people are going to take it much longer.
Get it together.
Yep. Yeah. Speaking of getting it together,
I mean the thing is they who was it that they gave this to port it? Was it Iron Galaxy?
Iron Galaxy.
Iron Galaxy's only got like 12 people in their team.
Basically,
and they expected
12 people that worked on the Arkham Knight project. There's a few more in-house that are still working on KI. But,
oh my gosh. I just looked up Angry Joe's reaction to this. His face.
It's just
his face.
I told you.
Oh my god. It's awesome. I know that feel.
Yeah. We've all been there.
Usually with Photoshop.
Yeah. If you're going to watch that video, I recommend putting the volume on low because you're going to be deaf by the end of it.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I got to pause it right here, and when we get done, I've got to listen to this.
And he doesn't start soft either. I mean, he's like, fuck you, people.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. The thing is, I was saying, you know, this was Iron Galaxy, and it's just like 12 or a dozen or so people, and they expected them to port this huge, giant game.
Yeah.
And expect it to go off without a hitch.
Yeah.
That's madness.
Yeah, well, I mean, the QA team had been identifying those problems for months, and Iron Galaxy just couldn't get it together. So, yeah, we can harp on.
Well, I mean, there was only a handful of people working on it. I don't care how hard you work, there was no way that thing was going to be a game that size was going to be workable on a PC port in the time that they had.
Yeah, well,
I mean, like, there was just no way.
Yeah. It's almost like they had guns to their head and Warner was just saying, fix it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it boils pretty down much. To the fact that, you know, Warner didn't take the PC port seriously.
No, you know? They set them up for failure. I mean, it's ridiculous.
When you get right down to it.
And the thing is, you know, Iron Galaxy, and here's the thing that's really sucks, is that Iron Galaxy is going to get a good share of the hate on this, and honestly, considering what they had to work with, I'm surprised the thing doesn't instantly crash within 3 seconds.
Yeah. Well,
I mean,
some reports apparently that's the case. So it's the performance.
All
of
I'm saying
is all over
Iron Galaxy doesn't deserve any of the hate here. All of the hate should go to Warner because Warner was the one that forced on them this unbelievably huge project for this small amount of people with only a short amount of time to do it. Yeah. So
agreed.
Yeah. They clearly just didn't put the resources behind it. I mean, if they were going to hire Iron Galaxy, they could have at least hired on a few more people to help out. I mean,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
they didn't. And now we're left with a crappy PC port that Iron Galaxy has to basically make work over the next few months. So, yeah, good luck.
Oh,
with them
while
there.
Working on KI all their other for projects. Windows and,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So Warner. Bad Warner. Bad. That's pretty much what it boils down to at this point. Yeah. I mean, we kind of have to hold their feet to the fire and hope they learn their lesson. But
something with a rolled up newspaper like a naughty puppy.
Nope.
Yep.
Mm. Yeah. They'll screw us over again. Just you wait.
Yep. Pat, you want to bring us to this next story?
Yeah, apparently Katsuhiro Harada has a pretty big Tekken 7 announcement planned for Tuesday. No indication of what exactly it is, but an image attached to the announcement includes text when you translate Awaken Raging Fist. I'm thinking that it's going to be the arcade update that the console port will inevitably be based on. Just like Tekken 6 had Bloodline Rebellion that even though it was just released on console as Tekken 6, it was actually that upgrade. And Harada has kind of implied in the past that this is the system that they're operating on now. They're going to do the arcade revision first and then port it to console later.
Yeah. That's actually a really good way of doing it because it shows where your focus is. It's arcade players, and you bring it home later and you worry about that. Yeah, since the arcade hardware is pretty much exactly the same as the console hardware it's going to be running on, it's not going to be that hard of a port.
Yeah.
So you can really focus and make sure that the arcade features are working the way they're supposed to. Because they got some funky card stuff over there in Japan that we generally don't have here.
And Namco is still more than willing to flex their arcade muscles. I mean, there have been so many loc tests for Tekken 7 already that, you know, it's obviously had its full arcade release in Japan. But if you go to tournaments on even a semi-regular basis here in North America, you've had a chance to play it. And so the fact that they're holding off on the console release doesn't, you know, on any level detract from the availability of the game to play in the sense that you would ordinarily think of it with arcade games in 2015.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, Tekken 6 and Tag 2 were getting to the point where you were basically playing Tekken the spreadsheet.
Yeah, Tekken 6 and Tekken Tag 2 were kind of, they're what I call stupid math fighters.
Yeah.
If Tekken 7 can bring us back to kind of that Tekken 5 style of play, I will be all about it.
Yeah.
And I'm still waiting for that Marduk announcement. Hopefully he's in the new revision or whatever ends up being the console version. Just because I'm not sure I have it in me to take up a new Tekken main after all these years. But I don't know. you know, however this game comes out, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Yeah, I've played all of the Tekkens, you know, so far, and
everything I've seen about it makes this look like a return to form.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's hope they get there. Yep. We'll probably see even more of it at Evo this year, so it's going to be very interesting.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
You know, whatever they're announcing on Tuesday might be shown at Evo.
Yeah.
In a couple weeks, so who knows?
Yeah.
I really wish I could have made it to Evo this year.
Yeah, it's been a while since you've gone down there, hasn't it?
It has. Mm. Then again, I remember what the weather's like in Vegas this time of year, and I'm not so eager to...
Yeah.
No, because it can be like 115 degrees.
Yeah.
During Evo, it's miserable.
Yeah.
But
although when you don't go, you miss stuff like Daigo sleeping on the picnic table. So that's,
yeah,
that's nice. Yeah.
Yeah, Lee was actually the one who shot that video.
Why am I not surprised?
Hey, well, you gotta catch your Z's somewhere, you know.
That's true.
Yeah.
Can't beast all day.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll look forward to that, and we're also going to be looking forward to the addition of the physical copy goal for Shenmue 3 on the Kickstarter.
Yep.
And just like that, the Kickstarter lives again.
Yeah, it's like okay.
Yeah.
It started to hang kind of around the $3.5 million mark. Yu Suzuki adds the PS4 physical copy, and as of right now, we're sitting at $4.3 million.
Yep.
At this rate, we might yet see this game get the $10 million he's looking for.
Yeah. Well, there's 12 days left, so there's got to be a big spike towards the end to make that happen. But
oh yeah,
it could. I mean, the $5 million is well within reach.
Yeah.
So we'll see how it goes there. The physical copy for PS4 was kind of a glaring omission. I don't know what the situation was that they couldn't initially do that.
Yeah, that seemed a little bit strange to me, but problem solved now. So maybe it had something to do with getting the game confirmed in the first place, because a lot of the time you'll see new options added, new ways to pay added, only once a game has actually funded.
Yeah.
So maybe he had to wait until it was over the $2 million mark, but that was like within days of the announcement, so I'm not sure what took so long. I'm just happy it's coming.
Yeah.
And that's it's also just crossed 50,000 backers.
Nice.
So there's that. That's that is an insane number for Kickstarter.
Yeah. Yeah.
How is this game going to do once it's finally on PSN, once it's finally on Steam?
Yeah, I'm thinking it'll do pretty darn well.
Yeah. And hopefully Sega's paying attention. I mean, obviously they know it's a thing because they had to okay it for Yu Suzuki to use the license. This has to give them some idea of how much money they would get out of re-releasing the first two games, you know, on modern platforms.
Yeah. Oh, I really hope they they pay attention and do that, because I've been, you know, trolling eBay and Amazon for a copy of the Dreamcast Shenmue 1 and Shenmue 2 for Xbox, and the lowest I've found for either of those is $50 US for a used copy.
Yep.
There was There was that idiot who was selling the sealed copy for $600.
That guy.
I don't think he's going to get $600, but you never know.
He'll get good money once he finally brings the price down.
Yeah.
But he's not getting $600.
No. Even if it is, you know, immaculate.
Yeah. That being said, I can't say much either, because I've got various Shin Megami Tensei games that I'm keeping in that condition just for such a purpose.
Yeah, but yeah, I want to see Shenmue 3 happen. It looks like it will. Let's hope it doesn't take until July of 2017 to do it.
Yeah, I think. I mean, I can understand why we're seeing these super conservative release dates on Kickstarter items, but I also don't think that putting those on there or doing the Kickstarters themselves any favors. I think a lot more people would have gone in for Bloodstained if Igarashi had said ahead of time that he wanted to get the game done by E3 of next year.
Yeah,
I think that was the timetable that he said.
Yep.
But instead, he put it down for
March of 2017.
Yeah, and that probably kept a lot of people out who would have otherwise kicked in if they knew it was coming sooner than that.
Yeah.
So
even without those people, they still obliterated any expectations they had. So.
Mm-hmm.
I still think because of Shenmue, it's going to be a short reign. But and then another one to keep an eye on now is Red Ash.
Hmm.
This is basically Mega Man Legends 3.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's kind of a play on words, Red Ash, Redash.
Yeah.
And I mean, the thing, you know, he hasn't come out and said it, but he's dropped enough hints that.
Well, he's doing everything that he can to say it without getting sued by Capcom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And people have gotten the message clearly because it's sitting at $191,000 right now. It's not setting the world on fire like Shenmue 3 or Bloodstained, but it will have no problem funding, and it will probably have no problem funding this week.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
With 29 days to go right now.
Yeah.
Yep.
We like it when traditional games are being made. So
yes.
This is a good thing for all involved. Except for maybe the big publishers that passed on them to begin with.
Yeah.
Here's to lessons learned. If they get the right message from this, then we're going to see them double down on it.
Yeah.
So you'll have the original creators making games that are in that vein, and then you'll have the rights holders making those games in the same vein, and it's more of a good thing.
Yeah.
All I can say is, you know, Capcom and Konami and Sega must all feel like complete idiots right now.
Yeah. It's like, oops.
I don't know. You look at the Kickstarter numbers. Obviously, they're smashing successes by any reasonable measure. I don't think those publishers are using a reasonable measure still.
No, I think their expectations are way, way too skewed.
The
Call of Duty side of the pendulum. And even that's seeing a downward swing right now. So Activision's going to have to start adjusting their expectations over the next couple of years.
I would be really interested in seeing what Activision could crank out in a post-AAA world.
Well, I mean, they were the original AA publisher.
They were.
Mm-hmm.
It would be very interesting to see what would happen if they had to kind of go back to that kind of status. And, you know, that would be intriguing.
That could be fun, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a bubble that's probably going to burst in the next couple of years, and we'll see how it all shakes out.
It'll happen this gen, I think.
Oh, yeah. Well, so on to our next interesting story. I mean, I think most of us have been waiting for this to talk about this one. Mr.
Burn,
Leland
Baby Burn.
Yee.
Oh, Mr. Yee. Allow me to just, you know, just strip down to my skivvies and bathe in this huge bath of Schadenfreude that I've made for myself, because karma's a bitch, ain't it?
Wow, that is a mental image I did not need today. Okay.
But justified, absolutely.
Yes.
Just to give you guys just a little bit who this guy is, Mr. Leland Yee was a former Democratic representative from the state of California, who, amongst other things, became infamous in the last few years for becoming one of those, probably the last great anti-violent video game crusaders.
Well, he kind of flew under the radar because of Jack Thompson, but
what makes Leland Yee stand out is that he actually managed to have a case go up before the Supreme Court, and in that case, the Supreme Court finally made it clear that video games are a protected form of speech in the United States.
Yeah.
Thank you for the amendment.
Yeah. He ended up having the opposite effect of what he was intending.
And on top of that, it also made the laws of the law he was trying to pass was to ban the sale of violent video games to minors. And that was actually the case that went before the Supreme Court. So on top of that, it also made the sale of violent video games to minors no longer.
You're breaking up bad.
Yeah.
And we all sort of had our shouting Freud moments because, the bastard lost. Oh, but it gets so much sweeter than that. Because guess what our best friend, Mr. Yi, was doing behind the scenes?
And it also bears stating that he was also a major, major gun control guy.
Yes, thank you.
Oh, yeah.
In addition to his game industry extracurriculars, he was also a major gun control guy, which makes this all the more delicious.
Oh, well, yeah.
This guy had apparently so many extracurricular activities. It's kind of ridiculous here.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Can we say hypocrite? Because I think that's what we're going to be saying after we tell everybody what this little person has done.
Yeah. Oh, God, yes.
So
he was trying to smuggle in weapons for what was it, the Philippines, New Jersey mob or something.
He was working with, yes, the honest to God mafia, smuggling guns to the possession of a Philippine Islamic extremist group.
Uh-huh. He was trading he's trading votes for, you know, $10,000 in campaign funds. He was
extorting money.
Oh yeah, he was threatening to vote against people if they didn't contribute to him. He was laundering money with his little buddy who was helping coordinate the campaign funds. Wow. Just wow.
He was in bed with Shrimp Boy Chow, one of the big crime lords in Chinatown. Wow. This guy was one of the biggest campaigners against GTA. This guy's life was GTA.
So now it's about to be GTA because we're pretty sure Rockstar's writers are already planning his satirical crucifixion.
I mean, you can't write material that's better than the real thing. I mean, you just at this point you just hire.
But they can sure try, and I'm sure they will. This is Rockstar.
Yeah.
Well, you can always bring Chinatown Wars back, so.
Oh, yeah. totally applicable.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
This is just an absolute.
This is perfect.
It's a shite storm, his political life.
Yeah.
Just, oh.
Yeah. Now I understand his position on gun control. He wanted to control all the guns.
Yeah. See, if he could get gun control, it means his gun running business, he could get rid of the competition.
Yep.
So,
do you know what
it's all makes sense now, doesn't it?
It totally does.
This is what I want to see Rockstar do with somebody in a game, maybe a little bit in his likeness. I want him turning tricks on the corner.
Oh my God.
Yep.
Stay tuned.
Well, you know that the Housers are talented writers, so
you're
going to be able to pull it off. It's these guys.
Yeah.
And I want to mention again, this guy was helping run guns for a Philippine Islamic terrorist group.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds an awful lot like treason to me.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, that bulk.
But he's wealthy, so you know he'll be able to buy his way out of it. So
you got that right.
Hmm.
The
also,
only
that,
thing
bulk data collection the NSA has been doing was really effective here, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, so effective.
Yeah.
All right, we got him.
Yeah, that's a discussion that could dovetail into just
the entire podcast. So let's not go in there.
Yeah, but yeah, karma's a biatch, as Brandon says.
And Rockstar's gonna make him their biatch.
Well, we now have the first DLC for Grand Theft Auto V in place. I mean, it writes itself.
Yep. So from one awesome story to kind of another awesome story in another completely different area of gaming.
This one kind of came out of left field.
Yeah. A Nintendo PlayStation prototype. The number two, from what I've been able to ascertain on the photos, was found in a box, apparently by some dude on Reddit, whose father apparently worked for Sony Interactive.
This is what happens when people don't know what they have.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
I mean, this is one of the most important pieces of video gaming history that we've got now.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it really just came out of nowhere. It was sitting in some dude's closet for like 25 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we still don't know if the unit powers up. I don't know if they've gone ahead and tried that out yet. I mean, it's 7.6 volt DC power supply. You can get those anywhere.
Yeah, hopefully they got to do some cables by now.
Yeah.
Seriously. Yeah, you know, if they were really, really, you know, hesitant about what's going on inside that unit, I mean, I think they would probably be well served to send that crap over to Luke Morse over in Japan. Let him take a look, because that dude is amazing.
Yes, he really is.
Yeah.
The
really interesting part is that, okay, if this came from Olaf Olafsson's stuff, then this is the unit that was shown at CES 91.
Yes.
That a couple of people saw, but really was kind of swept under the radar, because that's when Nintendo kind of dropped that bomb on Sony, saying, yeah, we're going to be working with Philips now.
Yeah.
Nintendo screwed them over, and the next 5 or 6 years kind of wrote themselves.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
To our advantage, so... Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't go back and change anything here.
No, me either. I mean,
there was a whole lot of douchiness going on, as Patrick was telling me.
Well, it was probably the douchiest thing that ever happened.
Yeah, but it's no, you know, it wasn't just Nintendo's Nintendo's fault here. I mean, there was douchiness going on both sides. When you got Ken Kutaragi in the mix, I mean, that's going to happen. Yeah, Sony was...
Sony were being arrogant douches, Nintendo were being vindictive douches, and the end result, like I said, probably the douchiest thing that ever happened.
Yeah. The really interesting part was, as you spotted, the date on that cartridge that was sitting inside that.
Yeah, that doesn't add up.
No.
Because Nintendo screwed Sony over at CES 91, arguably to get out of their own screwing. The cartridge that was in the box with that prototype was marked October 6th, 1992.
Well, either it was marked October 6th, 1992, or June 10th. Depending on, I don't know how they how they write the month and date in Japan, if they go date first or month first.
And the katakana on it just said demo.
Date first, month first.
Okay, so it's October. Yeah.
So here's the interest. What was the demo? I want to know what's on that cartridge.
Yeah.
And we're not going to find that out until dude gets a power supply.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How could he not have one already? I mean, really?
There wasn't one in the box. He, by all accounts, is not a gamer who would just have one sitting around. He didn't even realize what he had.
Yeah. Radio Stinkin' Shack still exists in a few places. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I think that's the case. It's just somebody being way more cautious than they need.
Yeah, he seems really reluctant to plug anything into this thing for fear that he'll fry it.
Yeah, well, I can kind of understand that. I mean, haven't been charged for...
He's not tech savvy. Yeah. I would be nervous as all hell, too.
Yeah.
Oh, why would you be that nervous? Well, it is a prototype, I guess. Because I was going to say,
it's a prototype,
you know,
and he's not tech savvy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he might look at that that power supply spec. That could be Greek to him.
Yeah, probably.
I guess it could be. But if it's probably...
people like us, we understand it. We look at it, and we know exactly what we need to go and get. Hook it up. That doesn't seem to be the case with this guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so thinking about it in those terms, yeah, I would be nervous as all hell if I didn't understand how to read the spec.
Yeah.
I wonder if he's also thinking that this is going to, you know, net him a good bit of cash, too.
Oh, if he puts that on eBay, you absolutely, yeah. That's going to go for a couple hundred grand at least.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if,
Sotheby's. He needs to get Sotheby's or something like that on that.
Yeah. Still yet to be verified, but yeah.
It belongs in a museum.
It kind of does.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Who do you think it'd go to if he just put it out there for the highest bidder?
A museum. No, seriously, I think an organization with deep pockets would pick it up.
Yeah, organization with deep pockets. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if Iwata, like,
that's who I was thinking.
Going, whoa, this is history here.
Cool.
Yeah.
The thing is, if anybody still has a power source to be able to turn that thing on, Nintendo would definitely have one.
Yeah, well, it's a 7.6 V.
Yeah, you can pick one of those up on, you know, Amazon or wherever. Yeah. I mean, it's a standard barrel connector.
Yeah.
What worries me, though, is the condition of the capacitors inside there. Because if they haven't been charged in 20-plus years, and then you apply voltage to them all at once, they can pop.
Oof.
So it's one of those things where if you have to do that, you have to basically raise the voltage very, very slowly. You have to start with basically just a, you know, 1 millivolt, and over time just slowly charge them back up. And that's how you avoid popping them.
Okay. Yeah. See, now I'd be nervous even though I can read the spec.
Yeah. And for that, you definitely need a special, you know, voltage regulated power supply. Like basically a bench system that can do that on a timer. Oof. That or crack the whole thing open and just recap the entire thing. Which is probably a lot easier.
Yeah.
That's just me. You know, that's what I do. But anyway, I don't have that Nintendo PlayStation in my hand.
It would be nice if we did.
Yes. I'm sure somebody who knows what they're doing has probably contacted that dude by now. So.
Yeah.
Well, we can hope. And that's to say nothing of the contents of the CD that came with it. I'm sure that's all tech demo stuff that would have been shown at CES.
Yeah, no doubt.
And then there was another thing. I forget who posted the article, but it was a very impressively feet on the ground analysis of what would have happened if this system had gone forward.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people just think of it as, oh my God, Nintendo PlayStation, this would have been the greatest thing to ever happen in gaming. Not so much. If you look at what CD-based gaming was in the early 90s, there's a good chance it would have been a lot less PS1 and a lot more CDI.
Yeah.
A lot more 3DO.
Yeah.
The general understanding is basically that it's good that things turned out the way they did.
Yeah.
And not the way they could have.
Yeah, because I think the impetus back then was to do kind of a multi-purpose education / game / thing system, which is what CDI ended up being. Yeah.
That was ever so popular.
Yeah.
And the ironic thing there is that if they had gone forward with that, it would have been all Nintendo needed to scare Sony out of ever getting into the game industry.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The only thing that might have saved it, though, is what that guy failed to kind of take into consideration is that it would have been a system that Nintendo would have had first party on. That might have been enough to keep it from going the way of CDI.
You look at what Sega first party did with the Sega CD, though. I mean, eventually they got it.
Yeah.
They figured it out, but...
Mm-hmm. It took a little while, but yeah, they did.
Yeah.
Sewer shark still happened.
Yeah, it still happened. Dog breath.
And I'm just thinking about what, you know, some of the unfortunate places Nintendo could have ended up before they would have, you know, arrived at their version of Sonic CD or their version of, you know... It just seems like it was not destined to be a success in that form.
No.
Yeah.
No. But it could have led to, you know, a Nintendo 64 that was CD-based or something along those lines. But, you know, things shaked out a little differently. Sony kind of, you know, bullied their way into the business and did really well at it.
And that was how, Kutaragi sold it to the then head of the company as a revenge plan. Like, that's the only reason the PS1 went forward was because they were pissed off at Nintendo.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And it basically had to... Yeah, it was a bad project. I mean, a little bit more than half the board was kind of opposed to it. But they pushed it through anyway, and the rest is kind of history.
Yeah.
And I have to say that the Nintendo PlayStation... is probably, for those who haven't seen it yet, exactly what you would think of if you really thought about it, about what it would have looked like. It's one part Super NES, one part PS1, and one part, don't judge us, it was the early 90s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that, it was an ugly looking sucker, wasn't
it? Yeah.
I mean, it's got the CD player controls on it with a little LCD screen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of brings up an interesting thing. You know, a lot of the Super NESs, they look crappy now. They got all yellowed and everything. And
this one has started to yellow.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And what are they doing now? Okay, we've got a lot of stuff that's gray and black, which is awesome. But there's still some things that are white. Are they just all obsolete so quickly that we dump them?
They're using better plastics for one thing.
I wondered if that was the case.
Yeah, and it's even with those old plastics, it's actually possible to restore the finish.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Not toothpaste like with your headlights or something, is
it? No. It's a little bit more involved than that. I mean, you do have to mix some chemicals.
Yeah.
But it is possible to do. I mean, the formula for Retro Bright is out there on the internet. It contains materials that you can get at any drugstore. It's not hard to do. You know, the hardest thing about it is basically having a big UV source that you can put over top of it, because that's how it works. It permeates through UV. And it does a really good job. You just got to give it enough time to...
A big UV source like the sun?
The sun, you'd think that the sun would be a good way to do it, and some people do it that way, but the sun is very inconsistent. It moves.
It's true.
Well, we move,
but you know. So there's that.
It moves relative to our position.
Yeah. So you really want, you know, a good, nice, powerful UV light that you can stick over top of it and just let those things bake for a couple of days.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not bake, you know, just bask in the warm glow of ultraviolet.
Another thing I noticed from the video that the guy showed of the system, does that seem like a almost Sega Saturn sized unit to you?
A little bit bigger.
Almost.
Bigger than a Sega Saturn.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting into legitimate murder weapon territory here. Like you could kill
pretty much.
Yeah.
PlayStation.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that thing weighed a few pounds.
Yeah. I mean, you see him pick it up and
yeah, it's not light.
He steals himself for it.
Yeah. There's some heft to that thing. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm glad it was found. I hope they do the proper things with it and figure out what the heck's going on in there.
What a cool project, though, to work on. That's neat.
Yeah, if he wasn't interested in gaming history before, he sure as hell is now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what a great story about... I mean, my story of becoming a gamer is I think is pretty cool, with my mom putting me in a shopping cart at like 1 year old and letting me play Pac-Man on arcade machines. This trumps that. Okay.
Yeah.
He became a gamer because he happened to have the Super NES PlayStation unit, didn't know what he had, and it just opened up a whole new world to him.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. It's like, oh, hey, I was going through a box and found the rarest console ever. How does that happen? Anyway. Yeah, it's
he might want to room around that closet a little bit more, because you never know, he might find the Ark of the Covenant or something.
Yeah, the Holy Grail, that might be sitting in there too. So
Hoffa. Maybe Jimmy Hoffa's corpse or something. Yeah.
We were thinking the same
thing. Oh God, yeah. Anyways,
maybe that Malaysia flight made its way in there.
Oy.
Oy.
Too soon.
Yeah. So you want to bring us over to...
You are all laughing.
Yes, we are. We're horrible people. We are.
Yeah, we're going to hell. You're coming with us. This was decided long ago.
I don't know. I think with the humidity, you might already be there, dude.
That's true.
Good, yeah. Yeah. I've turned the air conditioning off for recording the podcast, and I'm regretting it right now.
Yeah.
That sucks.
So we got another Nintendo story, Pat. You want to bring us into this?
Yeah, Miyamoto is kind of waxing retrospective about the Wii U, why it went wrong. Obviously, we've talked about this on numerous times on the show, and I still think it was just a messaging thing. And, you know, we're always talking about how the people who have Wii U's love them, and once you get the system into somebody's hands, hooked, you know, into their living rooms, it's a great product. Miyamoto gets a little more philosophical than that, and I can't say I disagree with him outright, but...
What's his main argument?
His main argument is that the Wii U was mainly built around the concept of asymmetrical gameplay, whereas because tablet gaming started to spike right around the same time the Wii U came out, it got perceived as kind of tablet gaming light, mm-hmm. rather than that whole having that whole asymmetrical gaming concept working for it.
Yeah.
And so in a way you could say it was another messaging problem, but
yeah, the other problem I'm thinking, though, is that they had trouble executing on their own concept.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think any...
At least consistently.
There were some good examples in Nintendo Land that kind of got the point across, but those were basically just demos.
They never followed up on it.
Yeah. Very rarely seen any of the full games actually really make a compelling case, and it's still the case right now. Star Fox, you know, the way they're implementing the second screen on that feels like more of a burden than, you know, something that actually adds an advantage.
And they've got like 6 months to get it right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
holding out hope that they do, but.
Yeah.
But yeah, Miyamoto seems kind of disappointed by how it went out, because the asymmetrical approach he found was very interesting. But just with tablets stepping up the way they did right around the same time, it kind of messed with people's perceptions of what the Wii U was trying to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
they didn't really
push back hard enough against that perception.
Yeah, they didn't communicate well. They didn't educate the consumer on what this was actually for, not hard enough, I guess. Maybe they thought people would get it by, inference, but no, they didn't. So, you know, mom, who doesn't know anything about gaming, says, well, you know, my 10-year-old wants something. I'm just going to get an iPad because that's what everybody else has. And they all say that it's better than this and, you know, it can do more things. That's true. when people were looking at it as a tablet, it's not a tablet. It's a controller. Yeah. It really is. I don't know. But I can understand his frustration. You know, we've obviously, like you guys have said, you put a Wii U in somebody's house, they figure it out, they enjoy it. And it's, you know,
yeah, they are really good systems.
Yeah. But the little gamepad has helped with gameplay. And one of the best things is that, you know, when kid wants to play something and I want the TV, take the gamepad and go in the other room. Yeah. You know, that can happen.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's some great aspects to it. But, yeah, people just didn't get it at all.
Yeah.
The message wasn't even there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's been a learning experience for Nintendo here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Let's hope they don't repeat the same mistakes for NX. Because.
Well, here's an interesting thing about that, because in the same discussion, Miyamoto confirmed that he's not really taking an active part in the NX's development.
Ooh.
Yeah.
He's watching what's going on. You know, with the design process, he's paying attention, obviously, because he's going to be making games for it.
Hmm.
So he obviously has to be educated in terms of what the hardware is, what it does, what the hook's going to be, as it were.
Hmm.
But he's not, he's keeping his hands off of the R&D.
Yeah. Don't you think, though, that if he starts to see stuff that's, you know, really, really alarming to him, he wouldn't just go over there and go, "Danger, Will Robinson," you know?
Yeah,
kind of.
Well, sure he would.
That is his way.
We know Miyamoto's reputation. We know that if he thinks that something's going wrong, he will straight up just, he will just jump the whole project and start again from scratch if he thinks that's what's necessary. So.
And he was taking kind of the hands-off approach with the new 3DS, I think.
Hmm.
And then they were talking about scrapping the head tracking to save money.
Hmm.
And he jumped right in and said, "Look, if you're going to scrap the head tracking, don't even fucking release it."
Yeah.
And that was what saved probably the best feature of the remade system.
Yeah. Because with the new 3DS with the head tracking is 3D, that's actually usable.
Yes.
instead of having to put your head in a vice in the exact proper position so that you see it.
Yeah.
That was not good.
Yeah. And so we'll see what happens with the NX, but it's very interesting to me that Miyamoto's getting hands off with the general R&D of the system and just...
Well, Miyamoto seems to be sort of slowing down in general a little bit.
Could be. Maybe he's got people who are coming up that he's been mentoring for several years now. See, that could be too. I mean, well, we also...
he's had Aonuma and Tezuka for years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I honestly think that Tezuka makes better Mario games than Miyamoto has for quite some time.
Yeah, that might be a controversial opinion, but...
Oh, wow.
Mm.
No, I stand by it.
Please send your hate mail to smashbad.com.
Hey, we'd be getting mail.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, do something about that. Anyway... So that's the Wii U in a nutshell.
Yeah.
Yeah. We want to talk about Tokyo RPG Factory, and
it was what Square Enix's E3 press conference seemed to be building to, and it's something that I just think warrants further discussion, and you know, as we're on the back end of E3 this year and news items aren't coming up at the same pace that they were. Obviously, this week was a bit of an exception to that. But we've mentioned that we're moving more in a direction of discussion topics rather than news items per se as we push toward the holidays. It's kind of... I don't know. I mean, Yosuke Matsuda has said in the past that that Bravely Default is going to influence the direction of Square Enix moving forward, that Their goal is to take everything in the direction of quote-unquote heavy JRPGs, but based on their E3 press conference and a lot of the talk that has stemmed from the projects that we know have come out of it, it didn't really seem evident. But there is Tokyo RPG Factory to consider. The question I think it's all going to come down to is scope. You know, we don't know much about the size of Tokyo RPG Factory right now. If it's just a single token studio to crap out a traditional JRPG every few years, that's not going to be enough for a cultural restoration at Square Enix, which I think is what they absolutely need.
There's the other side of that, though, in that, the other connotation of a factory would be, a soulless organization pumping out formulaic and derivative works. I think that's something that Square kind of wants to avoid as well.
Mm-hmm.
To that point, I would just say it depends on what you mean by derivative. They almost seem scared of the traditional JRPG as much as they want to embrace it because of Bravely Default. And this goes back to Nomura's comments about the Final Fantasy VII remake. If we're to take turn-based or ATB-style battle systems as being genuinely dated, that would make them literally the only JRPG company in the industry that thinks that way. But it would also explain why they've been going so hard in the direction of action RPGs and real-time battle systems in recent years. How content would they be to let, to let studios like Atlas or Nipponichi or Nihon Falcom take the lead on JRPGs? In Matsuda's own words, heavy JRPGs. In the future, is Tokyo RPG Factory supposed to be a studio to counteract that? Are they supposed to be there to help Square Enix return to form? Dare we hope for something akin to their 2000 output from them? That might be a little bit of a pipe dream, because that was a ridiculously productive window of time for them. That was the year we had, even though they weren't Square Enix yet, you had Threads of Fate, Chrono Cross, Vagrant Story, Legend of Mana, Final Fantasy IX. Mm-hmm. From the Enix side, you had Valkyrie Profile, all over the course of about 6 months.
It was a golden age.
It really was.
Yeah.
And, show me that Square Enix. That's what I'm really wanting to see them get back to. I don't know if Tokyo RPG Factory will ever reach that level of production, but I would even be happy if they were putting out two solid JRPGs a year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's understandable, just based on this early state, that if Project Setsuna is the only game we get from them for the next year or so, or at least that we know about from them. But once they really get moving, I'm hoping that this is actually a collection of studios that will be tasked with restoring that identity for Square Enix, because, the genre is really on an uptick.
Mm-hmm.
If you pay attention on every level, it's on an uptick. You look at the current PS4 library, and it's already very well represented there. PC, you can't ignore that anymore for JRPGs. You're seeing a huge presence on Steam. Square Enix should really feel like they've got skin in this game. They, back in the heyday, they were the king of the genre. They were the best thing going, and based on what we know now, based on how things are now, what's on the table right now doesn't cut it.
No, it really doesn't. But
depending, you know, again, the question is scope. What are they willing to put into this new studio, this new subsidiary? Is this their plan to get back to the top, or are they just going to kind of?
Well, maybe they're feeling their way through it too. Maybe they don't really know if the audience is out there. They should know.
Yeah, I mean, they look at how everyone else in the genre is doing.
Yeah,
I think I think that question answers itself.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially when you said you can't ignore PC. And yeah. if they take a look at where the gaming money is being spent, surely they could realize. But I can also see them kind of playing it safe from a business, you know, standpoint. They might just be feeling it out here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I still have pretty high hopes for the Matsuda era at Square Enix. I think E3 was a bit of a misstep, but not a huge one. The Chrono Trigger faux pas was a bit of a problem, and I still have a lot of misgivings about the Final Fantasy VII remake until we see more of it in action.
Well, you brought up the Chrono Trigger thing. I've been looking at some of the stuff of Project Setsuna. They've been putting out some concept art, and it looks like this might be the Chrono follow-up you've been thinking of.
Well, they showed that painting of what looked like an ice world. I thought we were looking at what was left of Zeal.
Nope. And they got some other stuff. They got some of that looks futuristic. Some of it looks medieval. They got this one painting with, you know, what looks like a big clock thing on a cliff face. So, yeah, this might be the Chrono thing you're looking for.
What?
You think maybe they softballed it. Just dropped Setsuna in there without really giving any context to what it might have actually been.
I mean, during the press conference, when they were showing those screens, I was getting a real Chrono vibe from it. And then why would they softball it, though? I mean, this was the E3 where everyone was coming up to make everyone's dreams come true. If they would have, I mean, even if they just call it Chrono Project Setsuna, that would have been a mic drop moment. So I like to think that's the case. I'm sold on, you know, I'm deeply interested in what they're trying to do with Project Setsuna, whether it's a new IP or a Chrono game or whatever. But it just seems like if that's what it was, then this was a wasted opportunity.
This is the picture I'm talking about.
Okay.
This is probably the one Patrick's talking about, but
I will find out here in a moment. Yes, that's the one that I saw. I mean, doesn't that just scream
post? That screams Chrono,
yes.
Doesn't it?
Yes, loudly.
Not just Chrono, but post-Zeal Chrono.
Mm-hmm.
Probably about 10,000 BC.
Yeah, and they've also got this sort of, this kind of pseudo-medieval one right here. And that's sort of a village.
Yeah. You know, now that I think about it,
I'm kind of
with how they announced whatever Project Setsuna might have been. Now follow me here. They already announced the Final Fantasy VII remake. That's huge news.
It is.
You know, the news cycle was dominated by that for days and days after E3. I mean, and so much so that we kind of tuned out of it. Because it was like, yeah, okay, we know.
Here's the third pit right here.
If they came out and said, straight up, we are making a Chrono sequel, that pretty much would have been Square's story for the entire news, you know, cycle. and it probably would have overshadowed absolutely everything else, including the Final Fantasy remake.
I don't know about that. I think they would have shared billing.
Yeah, but I mean, when it comes Square to Enix passionate would've... fan bases, I would kind of lean towards the Chronos as being more hardcore than the Final Fantasy VII guys.
More hardcore, yes, but also smaller. I mean, they don't have that modern presence that the Final Fantasy's fandom has been continuously fed for better meals or worse, steadily over the years. Whereas Chrono series fans,
Yeah, it's a tough one, isn't it?
It's a tough one. I think I would have gone ahead with it.
Yeah,
I really would have. There would have been no doubt that Square Enix won E3.
Hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it would go down as one of the best E3 performances of all time, if not the best.
Yeah, I think we're, as we're seeing on the, you know, stuff that they're starting to leak out.
Yeah, well, all this stuff was from E3.
Hmm.
That we're looking at here, and we should probably put those links in the show notes.
Yeah, let's do that.
But
yeah, we might have to revisit this one as time.
Yeah, this is something that we're all going to be paying attention to in the coming months and years. Mm.
Yeah, we got Gamescom coming up. We do.
TGS should be telling.
Yeah,
I'm wondering. This Project Setsuna. Do we know who's going to be, like, doing the writing and directing on it?
That's a good question.
Because, like, I'm thinking if we'll find out, like, if it turns out it's, like, Masato Kato, then, yeah, it's going to be a Chrono game. Because, I mean, he was the main story guy for Chrono Trigger and Chrono Cross. Hell, he was the director for Chrono Cross.
Yeah.
So.
And that's another thing. I mean, they've been pretty mum about who's heading that project. So maybe that in itself is telling.
Doing a little sleuthing right now myself.
Well, I mean, technically, Masato Kato is freelance now. He's not necessarily under Square Enix's employ, but it's completely possible that, you know, they could bring him back for it. Yeah. So.
Well, that's amusing. You look for Tokyo RPG Factory on Wikipedia, and the first result you get is Galapagos RPG, which we've talked about on the show before. It's the dedicated hardcore JRPG studio under Compile Heart and NIS. So I just found that amusing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They already have a website in Japanese, and the Japanese is... Oh, wait, there is English, too.
Hmm.
Oh, I like this. I like this a lot. Countless adventures captivated us when we were kids. Now it's time for us to return the favor with adventures of our own. It does describe Project Setsuna as a new series.
Yeah.
So I think that shoots down the Chrono theory, unfortunately. Okay. Well,
it doesn't completely rule it out, but it's...
It doesn't rule it out
entirely, but it could. Yeah. Also, I do want to point out what you just did was read an English page on a very, very Japanese production house.
Website.
Yeah.
So,
take that with a grain of salt.
Well, not necessarily with a grain of salt, with a grain of hope, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Things get lost in translation.
Yeah. I'm sorry, we're not hiring at the moment.
Yeah.
I'm reading the About Us, and it doesn't say anything about staff.
Yeah, that's one of those. We're not ready to reveal this yet.
I want more information at TGS.
I'm sure we will get it. We got TGS is when? September?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, a couple of months. Yeah, we'll all be broke by then, but that's okay. Their games probably won't show up until next year anyway, so we'll
have to work on it.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, it's completely understandable if we don't hear of anything but Project Setsuna from them for at least a year.
Yeah. But I want to be cautiously hopeful about, you know, Tokyo RPG Factory. I'm not going to... Okay, they may have misstepped at E3 with that softball announcement for Chrono, if it in fact was that.
I would blame Square Enix itself for that misstep. That you can't pin that on Tokyo RPG Factory.
Even if
they're not working on a Chrono game, there's, you know, we could look at this in hindsight as the announcement of one of the greatest RPGs of all time. That may be overly optimistic, but I'm not ruling out the possibility. The JRPGs are making a huge comeback right now, and I think it's in Square Enix's best interest to get to the forefront of that, because despite the last 10-15 years or so, their entire identity is deeply steeped in that. And if there's a resurgence going on and they're not at the forefront of that, then I think you might as well slap a giant EA, Activision, Ubisoft label on them, and because that's what the future of the company would end up being.
Yeah. Well, they were there once, and I think they could be there again. I mean, we got a couple of stories that we cut from this week's show because we wanted to talk about it
indefinitely.
But yeah, they've got, you know, DQ 7 and 8, which are coming westward. DQ 11, which is going, that's Dragon Quest for you guys who may not be familiar. Dragon Quest 11, which is an actual console RPG. So
yeah, Yuji Horii was very emphatic about that.
Yeah, to the detriment of his translator.
Yeah, his interpreter was not pleased.
God damn it, dude. It's like, yeah, so I think, you know, we won't spend too much time on there, but I think maybe they've got the message.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hopefully, you know, here's what I find weird. And I don't know if this is a staffing thing or what. Square Enix has been the same. They merged years ago. It's been over a decade.
Mm-hmm.
Dragon Quest, with the exception of that MMO, has always been super traditional. It's been a singular, concise thought as a series. You know, from front to back, it's, but you can set your clock by it. Final Fantasy, once the Mistwalker guys left, it's almost like they lost their way and they can't figure out what to do with it. There have got to be some guys. Hiroyuki Ito might be a good pick to really kind of lead Final Fantasy back to its roots, and hopefully. I really want Final Fantasy 16 to be a game that will have a real sense of coming home to people who were fans during the Super NES or the PS1 years, or even the PS2, to hopefully the exclusion of 12. It just seems strange that you've got this huge merger with two real genuine headlining franchises, and they've gone in such radically different directions. They're being handled in such drastically different ways. I would think that for Yosuke Matsuda, one of the most important things would be getting Final Fantasy's message straight.
Yeah. That may yet happen.
Because I don't know how I feel.
A lot of this really boils down to just a marketing message that's completely like all over the place and has been for years.
Yeah.
It seems like
Hopefully
is starting to get his house in order and bringing things back to where they need to be.
Yeah. I mean, I really hope that in 2 years' time, we're looking back on Square Enix E3 2015 as a genuinely good show where great things were announced front to back. obviously, we still got questions about the Final Fantasy VII remake. Obviously, we don't know what Project Setsuna is yet, but hopefully hindsight will make this E3 look as good as it has the potential to be for them.
Yeah. You know, this may very well have been the year of Square Enix Regenesis, you know?
I love that the JRPG genre is surging like it is, but it would just feel wrong if Square Enix wasn't a big part of it.
Yep. Totally agree.
I would be generally okay with it if Square Enix, you know, doesn't have it in them, if they're only really in it for the Final Fantasy 15 type of stuff anymore. But it would be so much sweeter if they could really get back to what made them great back in the day and really be a big part of what we're seeing with, you know, everything that NIS has got going on and everything that Falcom's bringing to the table. And, you know, Square Enix belongs in that company.
Yeah.
But what if they don't want to go back to that? That's the really scary thought for me.
Yeah.
To that I could only say it depends on how you read Nomura's comments. I mean, for better or worse, obviously Hajime Tabata isn't the guy who's going to restore Final Fantasy to where it was back in the 90s. He's got a good thing going. He's a great game developer. I can't take anything away from him. But I think the game to look at really has to be the Final Fantasy VII remake. You know, what is Tetsuya Nomura about as a game developer? And he's taken a really weird path to it. He didn't join the company as a game developer. He joined it as an artist. He became a character designer for Final Fantasy VII, and his popularity just exploded from there. And his prominence kind of insisted that he get a more prominent game development role when guys like Sakaguchi left. And, you know, maybe that wasn't a good spot to put him in. I can see why they felt like they had to do it. But I still think it's about Hiroyuki Ito. And what?
What?
Is that what you've been playing?
Yes, you're going to have to edit this out.
Okay. Oh, hell no.
It just randomly. So what happened is there's a chat window of all this. Obviously, we use Skype. And Teresa just dropped a screenshot. I'm guessing it's Neko Atsume.
Yep.
Okay, then.
Yes, it's perfect. Could you see me playing anything else?
Nope.
Damn it, Japan, we need to talk.
Well,
I just completely dropped my train of thought there.
That's okay. Yeah. But yeah. So
sorry.
Well, anyway. So yeah, to me, the fact that, you know, Tokyo RPG Factory is even a thing bodes well for Square Enix's direction in the future. You know,
yes.
it remains to be seen just how successful it's going to be. But given the fact that people really, really want JRPGs, they're not just located in Japan anymore. So
yeah.
I got a feeling that whatever Project Setsuna ends up being is probably going to do well because it has Square Enix's name on it. You know,
here's a thought.
That name still has cachet.
Yeah. It's taken a beating with the really JRPG hardcore over the years, but it still means something.
Yep.
And hopefully with Tokyo RPG Factory, we'll know what. here's the thought I just had. What if Tokyo RPG Factory is what Ito's doing now?
Yeah, that may be. the thing.
This is a guy probably the best JRPG resume remaining at Square Enix. And it comes from all corners of it. He's had a part of their successes, Final Fantasy IX. He's had a part of their failures, Final Fantasy XII, even though that was more Matsuna's doing. What if Tokyo RPG Factory is Ito's baby? That thought alone gets me excited. And it's pure conjecture at this point, but he's got to be working on something.
Yeah.
As far as I know, he's still with the company.
Yeah. And, you know, mentions of him have been, you know, slim to none in the past few months. So I get the sense that they kind of want to keep whatever he's working on under wraps for as long as they can.
He can't have just gone poof. I mean, there's obviously the possibility that he's going the way of Kojima and Igarashi and everything. I hope not.
Yeah.
Because I think Square Enix is a lot better with Ito involved than with him gone.
Yeah.
But that would be interesting to find out. And again, Tokyo Game Show is right around the corner. It's discussion. It's part of what we're here to do. And that thought just kind of struck me. You know, he's got to be doing something. As far as we know, he's still with Square Enix. That would be about a perfect fit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with that, we're probably going to end the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're just about to hit the 2-hour mark.
Yeah.
Did we really?
We totally did.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, get us talking about JRPGs and we can go for days.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll do some housekeeping here at the end of the show. I would like to remind everybody that we are, in fact, on iTunes. We are on TuneIn. So if you're listening to this on the website, you can subscribe via your favorite podcatcher. We're there.
sp-patrick.tumblr.com for the blog. I haven't been as active on there as I wish I had been of late, but I'll be working on that again and hopefully start bombarding the blog with stories that we'll be covering on the show. www.smashpad.com, of course, for our home website.
Yep.
Got
that. What else did I want to cover? Oh, yeah, you can catch me on Twitter at @fdenolfo. Patrick is at sp_Patrick.
Yeah.
You gotta change that, dude. Underscores.
Well, no, I wanted the Tumblr to be sp_Patrick, but they didn't allow that.
So there's that. Anyways,
I don't know. I think I'm pretty easy to find.
Yeah, we'll find that. Brandon is unfindable because he hates people.
I'm off the grid.
Yeah.
Brandon.
Yeah. So there's that. But, you know, any messages that you have for him, hate mail, just forward them to me and I'll make sure that he gets them.
But I still think I'm going to get the hate of the week.
Probably. So there's that.
Yeah.
And also we've got our Facebook page, facebook.com/smashpadsocial. You can interact with us there. We always post links to our stories or random stuff that may be going on. There's that. And, so that's all for the housekeeping this week. With that, I am Filippo Denolf.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Teresa Sammons.
And we'll see you all next week.